4 summers ago, Alan Foreman and his family were vacationing on a lake in Ontario, Canada, when he nearly died in a freak boating accident. Mr. Foreman survived, but with severe brain damage. Since then, Alan Foreman has had to relearn all those things we take for granted: speaking, walking, eating, dressing himself. He has also managed to return part-time to his work as a lawyer in Philadelphia. But it has been far more difficult for Alan Foreman and for his wife, Kathy Crimmins, to live with the change in Mr. Foreman's personality. He does not remember the man he used to be. Kathy Crimmins has written a book about the accident and its aftermath. It is titled Where is the Mango Princess? And she joins us here in the studio. Welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Kathy Crimmins, why don't you give us a selection from your book that tells us what happened that day?
Alan's brain got run over by a speedboat. That last sentence reads like a bad country western song lyric, but it's true. It was a silly, horrible, stupid accident. Only months before we were standing in an art museum, Alan had been lying in a coma in Kingston, Ontario. A Canadian government helicopter touched down on a highway near a remote lake where we were staying and rushed him to a teaching hospital. In the helicopter, Alan began to have seizures and stopped breathing. By the time he was stabilized in the emergency room, doctors and nurses were telling me they didn't know what would happen to him.
And did it all come at once to you, how enormous the task was going to be to rehabilitate? Because eventually Alan did wake up, come out of this coma. But then comes what struck me as I was reading this book, the enormous task of getting him back to doing the things he did before.
Oh, yes. An ICU nurse described coming out of coma to me as wading out of very, very deep water so that you see the top of the person's head and you can't distinguish their features for a long time. And in the beginning, the changes are really dramatic. I mean, when he opened his eyes and looked right at me and made a sound, I thought, oh, my gosh, he's here. But he wasn't really there. And then my husband learned to walk within 4 weeks of his accident, which is amazing. And he was never impaired in his speech centers because he was left-handed and he was hit on the left side of his head. I wondered in the early days why every medical report said, Mr. Foreman is a 44-year-old left-handed attorney. And that's because that really governs where your speech centers are. And if you're left-handed, they're scattered about more in your brain. So he was very lucky that way. So he could walk and talk. He didn't know where he was going or what he was talking about. I mean, he thought he was 12 years old and from Brooklyn. He was just totally confused and agitated. But because he could walk and talk, I had a hard time fighting for his cognitive benefits. And a lot of HMOs don't recognize that part of recovery from an accident like that.
Well, for the record, he was from Brooklyn earlier in his life.
Yes, but he was born in Brooklyn, but he hadn't lived there since he was 18. But this is very interesting. People's brains pretty much mature in terms of self-awareness, which is the last thing to develop, at about the age of 12 or 13. And I've heard this from a lot of the families of TBI survivors, that when they awaken, they say they're 12 or they're 13. And sometimes I wonder if the emotional development doesn't stop there too. I mean, my husband is wonderfully recovered. He's very high functioning, but he does often act like a 13-year-old boy. But he also has the absolute delight in the world that a younger person has. He's lost kind of his age weariness.
And some of the things that he had to learn was to become inhibited.
Yes. You don't realize how much your frontal lobes, which is where most of the major damage was for him, how much they control your inhibitions, and you become disinhibited. I mean, one of my favorite stories that I did tell in the book is while Alan was hospitalized, someone asked Alan about a friend of ours who was standing right next to Alan's bed and said, "What does Jimmy do?" And Al blurted out, "Jimmy's a homosexual." And our friend was very nice about it. He said, "Well, you know, that's my avocation, but actually I'm a development officer." But he'll say things like that all the time, even now. He'll get angry. He'll give the finger to, you know, people in a way that he never would have before.
Alan is not the man you're married anymore.
No.
You write about taking him home from the hospital first time, I guess a day trip back to your house. Could you read that for
us? Sure. He finally gets into the bed, but on the wrong side. We've been sleeping together for 18 years, and all that time he's always slept on the left side. Now he's on the right. I ask him about it, and he says he doesn't know it's not his side. Of course he doesn't. The effects of the damage to the left side of his brain seem to include his perception of left and right. This is just another version of those scenes at the hospital when he didn't know he was leaning way over to the right. I know that Al's inability to remember his favorite side of the bed is trivial compared to his more obvious deficits, but it disturbs me a great deal. I climb into bed next to him and wonder, why? Why does this stupid little thing bother me so much? For the first time, the pod person theory crosses my mind. I've brought my husband home from the hospital. At least I think he's my husband. He looks like him, if somewhat thinner. But now that my husband is in his home environment, I can see even more how the alien who is inhabiting his body just can't get everything exactly right. Al is off, like one of those humans in bad sci-fi movies whose brains have been devoured by creatures from another planet. The brain is gone, but the body stays on, acting as a host for the intergalactic parasite. There was a TV show when I was little, The Invaders, featuring space monsters who inhabit human beings. The only way you could tell if the people weren't their old selves was by checking their pinky fingers, which stuck up at a right angle after they had been subsumed by the aliens. Al's pinkies seem the same.
Your story is not just about how Alan comes through this, but it's about you and people close to you. And I understand that 75% of marriages where one of the partners gets such a brain injury end in divorce.
Yes, they do.
So how you're still married, but I think you're right that you're still in mourning in a way.
Oh, yes. It's actually been most intense this year. And after I finished writing this book, which was a while ago, I went into a very difficult period because I felt it was some sort of closure. Okay, well, now I've written this book about Alan's brain injury, so let's not have him be brain, you know, bring the old Al back. And that wasn't happening, and that was very jarring for me.
There are times, though, when you have to vent and vent to him, and you write rather honestly about your own reactions and to him. And I think there's an episode here where you're driving in Boston. It's a year or two into his recovery.
Yes, and he was very tired. We'd been at a party with dear friends. And this is typical of a brain injury situation. Everyone's going, oh my God, you'd never know that anything had ever happened to him. We're so happy. He's so wonderful. And as soon as we got to the car and that facade dropped, he was so exhausted he could barely speak except to get very angry when I made a wrong turn. And he started calling me a stupid effing bitch and this and that. And I just snapped and I was beating him about the head with the cell phone in my hand. I mean, can you imagine beating a person who's had a traumatic brain injury about the head? And I was screaming, I hate you. I hate you. You understand? I will leave you if you keep this up. I cannot live like this. And our daughter popped up from the back of the car, terrible moments in parenting, and said to me, Mom, he doesn't mean it. His brain is hurt. And then the next day, he took his shower first, Alan did, in the motel room where we were staying. And you know how you can write something on the mirror and then you can see it again when the steam comes up? Well, when I stepped out of the shower, he had written on the mirror, help me, I have TBI. And I think it was the first moment for me that, you know, I thought he really does know. And he is sorry for what he's done, but he can't control himself.
You have a daughter who was there when the accident happened.
Yes.
How has she come through all this?
It's been very difficult for my daughter. I mean, she was 7 when the accident happened. And at 7, you still have a magical sense. So it seemed like something fairy tale like had happened to her father. She saw him struck by the boat, and that was very traumatic. But then he was in this coma, and she could almost cope with the physical part when he was unconscious better than she could as he began to awaken, and he wasn't like her dad, and he was disinhibited. We had one bad episode of him doing inappropriate things in front of her, as much as I tried to not have that happen. Anyway, our daughter, she knows a lot about brain injury, and she can say very matter-of-factly to people, my father is brain injured. He got hit on the head. So he says things he sometimes doesn't want to say. He has to sleep in the afternoons because he's tired. I've overheard her telling her friends these things. But, you know, it was 4 years ago, and now her friends don't really realize that she still lives with that, and that's been hard for her.
Where is the Mango Princess?
We don't know where she is. This is something that Alan kept saying when he came out of his coma. Where is the Mango Princess? Just on one day, and when I asked him who she was, he got a very dreamy look and said, I spoke with her earlier today. Now, Kelly, our daughter, who provided the ending for the book, thank goodness children can often provide resolution that doesn't really exist in real life, said that she thought the Mango Princess was someone up in heaven when her father almost died, who told him to come back to us. Interestingly enough, there's an Indian legend about a little mango princess who lives in a mango tree, and a little bee comes to talk to her. And the gist of the story is that it's a dialogue about what is the self. The characters talk about how the self is something totally other than the body, of course, which we all think of. But they also come to realize that it's something different than the mind, that the self is a kernel of something that doesn't exist in either. And so I find it so interesting that that was in a legend about the Mango Princess, because I think if you want to love someone with traumatic brain injury, you have to go with the flow in that way and see that the person is not the condition, even though the condition does seem to permeate your life.
Kathy Crimmins, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Kathy Crimmins' new book is called Where is the Mango Princess? It is published by Knopf. She joined us here in our studio.